Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Darren Parkinson, and I'm here with my esteemed co-host, Alex Stoker, and we are Business Radio U, unifying business and university by showcasing the best in business. How are you doing today, Alex?
I'm doing great. Darren, how are you?
I'm doing great. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, especially considering all the snow and ice has melted. I can finally get out of my driveway, so that's a plus.
Yeah, snowpocalypse. 17 degrees last weekend, 70 degrees this weekend. Georgia, what you gonna do?
Yeah, it's that bipolar weather coming back.
Yeah, especially right when school starts up. How are your classes going?
It's too early to tell, but I have a good feeling that things are gonna go well this semester. Gotta ease into my schedule.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm excited too. I got a lot of stuff going on this semester, working with some interesting professors, different teaching strategies. I'm really excited. We have a very special guest today on the show, a recent Kennesaw State graduate, business developer, and CEO of Zerly, an unparalleled digital fundraising platform. It's my honor to introduce Zach Sergio.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
How are you doing today?
Yeah, it's been a solid week. Good to cap it off, little radio show, and head back to the office for a few hours and call it a week here.
Oh, nice. And where do you currently work?
So, full-time working at a company called QA Symphony. We're one of Atlanta's fastest-growing technology companies in the quality assurance space. And then for the past few years, been working on Zerly as well, along with a few business partners. So, definitely great to get the word out there a little bit today. And again, I appreciate you guys having me on board here.
And what exactly does your company do at QA Symphony?
So QA Symphony, we're a software quality assurance is a pretty technical field. But when you boil it down, our technology helps companies ensure that their software and their applications are working properly before deploying that to their users. So we work with from Verizon to Adobe to companies like Boeing. So in just 4 short years, they've acquired a lot of enterprise clients, and it's growing very quickly. It's a great organization to be a part of, for sure.
And how long have you been with them?
It's going on coming up on a year and a half. So in that time, it's been very interesting to go from a small office off of Piedmont and Buckhead to with 20 employees, and all of a sudden we have 50, and we're outgrowing our next office already, and quadrupled in size in the last year and a half or so, and it's looking to continue that pace even more as we look into 2017. So a lot of great things happening there.
Nice.
It's been a great thing to be part of.
And what are some of the recent projects you've been working on with other companies?
Yeah, so as far as that goes there, my main responsibility would be in the business development area. So, as far as our how our sales team is stacked up, it's your classic sales organization. So, you have your sales development team, outreaching to new organizations that are would be a potential fit for our products. Then transitioning that into technical demonstrations, proving our fit with them, and at the end making acquiring new customers as well. So like to think of us as in the boiler room of a company, feeding it the energy to keep going. So we've built out a good team, and it's continuing to grow as well in that department. We're very excited about that.
Oh, that's great. And I touched on it a little bit earlier, but you're a recent graduate from Kennesaw State.
Yeah, so graduated KSU this past May with a degree in professional sales.
Go Owls,
man! that was a great time there, and very thankful to be a part of the sales program. Going into school, would have never thought I would have left with a degree in sales. I always thought I was going to go classic finance or accounting route. And then, a few of my older friends, turned me on to the program and what it had to offer. And, after getting into that, I mean, it's really a launch pad for, any college student. We have like a 99% job placement rate right out of school.
Is this a special program at KSU?
Pretty much. So it's definitely growing in numbers in the last few years. It's, you know, it's really caught on with a lot of the students as you peel back the sales stigma. But it's sort of a subsect of the marketing. So it's technically a marketing degree, but it's, you know, the sales program falls within that because, you know, sales marketing.
Yeah, I never quite understood that stigma behind sales when it comes to marketing and sales graduates. Because to me, I feel like no matter what you're doing in life, you're always selling yourself. You're always selling your best abilities. And that's how you acquire future jobs, future employment, different opportunities.
For sure.
So, yeah.
No, for sure. No, I completely agree with that. Whether it's a job interview or, you know, future customer you're working with, I mean, you're always selling. So I think everybody's starting to realize that. They're coming around.
So what sets that program apart from others?
So we're actually, there's about 110, 120, similar, you know, sister programs across the U.S. And what's great about the program at KSU is that we hold a, it's called the National Collegiate Sales Competition, the NCSE, and that is held every year for over a dozen years now. It's been held at Kennesaw State. And this past year, we're actually placed first overall out of over 100 programs. So, the director and co-founder of the program, Dr. Terry Lowe, has hands-on teaching. And what sets the program apart from a lot of other programs, you know, even different majors, is that you get live training with this. So, you know, they'll put, they'll give you a scenario and they'll give a buyer a scenario with, you know, the various needs that they have. And, you have to go through and it's just like a live sales call. And then it's actually all recorded so that you can go back afterwards and watch what you did and you can see your mannerisms, but you know, you can dissect, you know, how you presented things, how you might have uncovered things, and you know, from there you can get better. So it's a good way to, you know, get comfortable with yourself for one. You know, get live experience, and you know, it's cool watching people start the program, and then by the time they get out, they're almost a different person. They're less afraid to speak in public. They're just more well-spoken people in general and just confident. So that's a great part of the program is being able to deliver.
Yeah, I feel like our millennial generation, that's one of our number one problems is public speaking. I was in class yesterday and we're introducing ourselves and we're setting up, kind of just like a mock interview, almost little bio about ourselves because we're going to be put into groups. There's so many group projects. And the number one thing that everyone said that they had an issue with was public speaking. It is nerve-wracking. It's tough. I mean, but it's something you got to work on. I mean, I'll be honest, I was terrified for a long time of getting up and talking in front of people, and then I just started trying things out of my comfort zone, and it's gone a long way.
Yeah, for sure. No, it definitely serves you well, and it's always going to be something you need once immersing yourself in the post-grad business world. So, even if you're not going to be a full-blown salesperson after you graduate, I'd recommend that that class to anybody going through the business school through KSU.
Exactly. And you mentioned the competition within there. Can you elaborate more on how that works?
Yeah. So, as I alluded to earlier, the big way they teach you is essentially these sales role plays, again, with the buyer scenario and you're the salesperson, obviously. And so you're graded actually on, they can break down the conversation into, a million little segments, from the approach to, framing your discussion to, uncovering what they're looking for, any problems they're facing, positioning your solution as something that's going to help what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then taking them through a presentation, the closing, the handling objections, everything. So they actually can break all of that down, and they have a panel of judges that are on the other side of all the cameras that can watch it, and they're the ones grading it. So we had every school sends two people from their sales program, and it's a like 3-day competition. Mm-hmm. It's huge. Through all of that, we came out number one overall. So we're
great.
Very proud.
Congratulations.
Of that. Yeah, thank you.
So you mentioned, the sales competition you did to kind of help people work on handling objection. Would you say there's anything that it helped you personally with?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, translating, you know, what we learned in the sales program to, you know, I interned at QA Symphony throughout my senior year, but was doing the same kind of thing the full-time folks were doing. But then, you know, afterwards, going full-time and really getting into depth with that, and then with Zerli doing, you know, the projects there, I mean, there's a lot that that taught me that would have been hard to learn for myself, or, you know, it just really shortens that learning curve.
Right.
But yeah, that was a great experience for sure.
If you had to pick just one skill that you think that you improved on through that program, what would it be?
One skill in particular. You know, it's funny that you just threw out one of them, but honestly, objection handling was probably one of the bigger ones. You know, there's so many different strategies that, you know, you can use, and they go through a lot of them. So that's probably the biggest, yeah.
Right.
And do you have any, I'm sure you've had quite a few interesting experiences with that program. It sounds pretty intense. Do you have any interesting stories or anything, experiences that happened?
You know, it's funny. There's about two semesters worth of curriculum when going through the program. And in the first year, I was the only, it's like an introduction to sales. So anybody can take that class as an elective, but it's required for us. And in that one, I was actually the only sales major or one of two in the class. And so I was consistently getting picked on by the professor too. It's, you know, if they had a, you know, a guest speaker or something, or, you know, they bring in a VP of sales from a company to, you know, recruit young talent. And it was always like, hey, Zach, get up here. We need you. So that was a pretty, you know, funny thing to,
you
know,
it's constant. Like you had a voice for it or something.
Yeah. Well, I guess so. So that was always fun, just to be put on the spot and mm-hmm. being able to think on my feet is probably a second thing that, you know, wasn't a strength of mine before going in there. And then coming out, definitely something that I'm comfortable with.
Cool. So were there any other experiences that you gathered from KSU that have got you to where you are now?
Yeah. I mean, just the people you meet, honestly, and just, you know, getting out there and getting as involved as you can. I mean, obviously, you know, studies are number one, as anybody would tell you, but, you know, going through and, you know, just meeting as many people as you can, whether it's, you know, my freshman year, you know, being on the rugby team, or, you know, going through Greek life and networking there, or the, you know, professional, you know, Greek organizations mm-hmm. that they have, like sales fraternities and stuff like
just
that.
Just a quick shout out to the KSU rugby team. Me and Zach actually played rugby together.
Yeah, I'm glad to. Thanks for the shout out.
No problem. And I heard that you were also involved with the entrepreneurship program at KSU.
That's correct. So one of the best things I stumbled upon in that program. So actually, one of my fellow co-founders of Zerli, he went to UGA, and he was in touch with Chris Hanks, who was teaching at University of Georgia at the time. And, you know, this past year, we're lucky to have him at Kennesaw State. And he you know, led the charge on, you know, building the program and taking it from a minor to a major and, you know, giving it a lot of legitimacy. So, yeah, I came in, I guess, last spring was the first offerings of those classes, and, you know, learned a lot from Chris Hanks and, you know, just that program.
Yeah, so you were there from the ground up.
Wow. Yeah. So now I need to get back in touch and, you know, go do a little guest speaker session over there. I want to see what they've been up to. Been too long.
So what were some of the things you took away from that?
Yeah. So, again, he was, There's so many things that go into, you know, entrepreneurship. He was very big on, at least for the class that I was in, it didn't get in so much of into detail on you know, creation of like business plan, you know, your marketing, finance, everything.
Yes.
But it was more of just you know, the biggest lesson he would preach is like the hardest part of getting started is getting started. I'm sure you've heard that on like the first day of class.
He
loves that phrase. Slap you over the head with it. But so just getting a hold of that, and it just really just empowers people just to get moving. Because mm-hmm. I mean, maybe this is something that's always been people's issue, but just execution is like mm-hmm. The biggest thing that he'll preach, and just like I said, the getting started part.
Yeah, he's a very passionate man. He actually spoke at a previous class I had, and just some of the stuff he spoke about having an entrepreneurial mindset, it really stuck with me and changed the way I think about a lot of things. And actually, I'm taking one of his classes this semester, mm-hmm. the same class that Zach took. And it's a very interesting class. I mean, our second day, he pulled us all from our tables. We all got against the wall. Mm-hmm. And he told us, look across the room and make eye contact with somebody. And walk across the room to that person and meet that person. Just introduce yourself. Then the next thing, we would find another group of two and we'd make eye contact and walk across. And just exercises like that to put you out of your comfort zone. It's just great things like that, I think, that are doing great things for KSU and just the entrepreneurship program.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that program grow because, again, as we're talking at the beginning of the show, at least for our generation, communication is going to be a big thing that falls short. But, you know, there's a lot of initiatives nowadays to, you know, to stimulate that and build that. So that's something that he's really doing. And there are people at the beginning of that class that were like, oh, what did I sign up for? I'd rather just sit on my phone and act like I'm paying attention. But by the end of it, you know, they're speaking in front of the class, they're giving presentations, they're doing spontaneous things. So, you know, it's amazing what one class and one professor can do for, you know, a group of students. So, you know, proud to be a part of that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. His first class, he had a list of things on the board that said reasons to drop his class. I've never seen a professor do that before, but that was pretty interesting. And it holds true. I mean, the second day, like I said, was very interesting, not like anything I've ever done before. And I enjoyed it. I met new people. I got to talk to people, other people. I'm sure it's absolutely terrifying for a lot of the introverts out there. I happen to be one myself. I've worked a lot on being able to communicate and talk well with people and stuff. I was a shy person a long time ago, and I just kind of broke out of my shell. So it takes a lot of work, but you can do it.
Yeah, it awesome. Definitely can be done. That's for sure.
And so let's talk about Zerli. Did that actually start up with the entrepreneurship program?
Yeah. So there's, I guess, backing up just to what it is. So essentially, it's a platform that allows a nonprofit to raise money. I think everybody is pretty familiar with the concept of like the high school, you know, football discount card.
Yeah, if you could just elaborate more.
Yeah, so that's essentially what we've done is translate I think everybody's had a kid knock on their door at some point or another, mm-hmm. asking them for $20 to get a plastic card that has, you know, 10% off here, oil change there. But what we are is a customizable mobile app that, instead of being a hard copy card, you can have a, you know, customized, mobile app. There's, landing page that goes along with it. So another thing that we take advantage of is being able to, you know, integrate with all the various social media platforms out there. And a lot of groups, whether it's a high school or women's group or whatever it might be, you know, everybody's big into social media these days. So we allow nonprofit organizations mm-hmm. to raise funds at a better scale by doing that.
So what got you interested in starting something like Zerli?
So I worked with it was in the earlier phases when I started working with it. There's two. Oh, I have two business partners in that. So Scott Hardman is really the product guy that is keeps the vision going, and I can credit him with the original idea. And then the other guy is Mark Vaughn, and he is a extremely talented developer. You can credit him with building everything out and making the product mature to what it's able to do today. So started working with them in the earlier phases, and I guess that would have been back in late junior year was when I first got connected with them. And then this past, I guess, the beginning of 2016, that's a year ago already, but that's when things really started kicking up. So we've learned a lot, been a lot of fun, met a lot of great people doing that as well. So mm-hmm.
So how'd you go about meeting your partners?
Yeah, so at the time, I guess my junior year, I was actually the philanthropy coordinator for my fraternity. And at that time, they had a small office in downtown Athens. And because Scott was a relatively recent UGA grad. And I guess one of the part-time interns at that particular time knew one of my older alumni brothers, and just put us in touch. And then we ran a small fundraiser for for our group on, and then, you know, beyond that, I was like, hey, this is really interesting. And, you know, considering that time I was working at a soccer park and looking for some business-minded things to do, that really got, you know, my feet wet with just entrepreneurship in general. So I can definitely circle back a lot of my experiences to getting involved as early. So I'm very appreciative of that.
And what pushed you to actually start it? Because you mentioned earlier the hardest part about starting a business is starting it, because ideas are, they're some of the greatest ideas out there, but they're just ideas until someone takes action. How did you take action?
Right. So, I guess I was still budding at that time, but I was more sales-minded than them. And, you know, they recognize that. That's why the three of us can make a good, small remote team, is, having one that can develop the product, one that can, lay out what we need, and then somebody else that can, do the demonstrations and acquire customers and everything. So, recognizing that gap and then getting started there made us, that's what really got us moving.
Would you say you had any challenges early on starting off?
Oh yeah, all the time. And there's still challenges, and those will, never go away. I mean, it's a pretty, bootstrapped organization, meaning everything's very lean. We're self-funded at the time. So, we don't really take a whole lot of, profit away, just like to reinvest that and, watch it organically grow. So, the three of us that, we also work with other successful organizations in a full-time role, so we can take the lessons we learned there and translate it into what we're doing. And, it keeps us on track.
All right. And what are some of the ways that you use social media to get your message out there and connect with different opportunities and partners and businesses?
Sure. I mean, that's the beauty of social media is that, can be utilized in so many ways. And, for us, I guess, getting, Twitter, Facebook obviously is important, but for just getting our message out there, but it's more important than anything for, our users to be able to utilize that. So, somebody that's, looking to go out and fundraise can go, just paste a link into, Facebook, Twitter, they can text it, they can email it, and that'll automatically, say like, hey, help Darren raise money for, it could be for the rugby team or something like that. So, help Darren raise, money for the rugby team, donate today. And then it shows you the various rewards that you get for donating. And then it, pretty seamlessly, allows you to pay online. And then, before you know it, you have an app on your phone full of a bunch of discounts to your local area. So, no, it's fun hearing from one user in the North Cobb Christian School, which is really close to Kennesaw State. He's like, I've eaten about 10 free Chick-fil-A sandwiches with that. I really appreciate it. So that's pretty funny to, not only reward, our clients and allow them to have a way to, manage their fundraising efforts, but also to, the people that are donating, and have them, give good feedback at the end of what, as well as it's makes for a pretty rewarding experience.
Yeah, that's pretty great. I mean, the businesses, they offer the discounts, they lose maybe 50 cents, a dollar or so, and it gets them business, gets people coming in, gets customers in, and you get to raise funds for noble causes. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Mutual benefits. That's amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's a win for everybody in the ecosystem, and like you said, from the nonprofit itself to the users, and then the restaurants get the name out there when you talk to them, and they're like, oh, I can put this there for free. It's like, oh, of course I'm going to sign up for that. And when it circles back to helping out the kids, that's always a noble cause as well. So
And what are some of the companies and restaurants that you've connected with?
Yeah, so a lot of times for our organization, that's more of, they've had a discount card in the past that they've used, and they're looking to translate that into, a mobile app. So, we've had names on there like Chick-fil-A or Burger King or Subway, or, the great part of it is we can give a, mom and pop restaurant that maybe doesn't have, maybe doesn't work with Groupon or, one of the other big discount, mobile apps out there, but we can give them a way to get involved for free. And, it's really easy to, get their name out there as well. So that's something that, we like to be able to help local businesses too, but it's great to work with the big names, of course.
So what's the actual process in acquiring them? How do you present yourself to these restaurants and companies? What strategies do you use?
Yeah, so you know, I've acquired merchants for you know, some organizations that didn't already have a base that they worked with, and it was a, you know, the discount fundraiser was new for them.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's just a matter of timing, just catching an owner or a GM at the right time. I mean, usually they're more than willing to help out a local cause or a, you know, a local organization, and you know, you can leave it up to them of, you know, whether they want to offer a, you know, 10% discount or a free appetizer or, you know, any combination thereof. So, you know, they usually get very excited about the fact that, you know, they have more control over it, and, you know, they can change it at any time. So there's like very little risk for them. You know,
Yeah. And physically, like, making contact with them, because it's one thing having ideas, saying just connecting with them like that. But what are some of, like, the physical things you do to make contact with them? Is it
as far as connecting with the merchant?
Like, do you physically walk into the buildings and talk to them, or do you email, or what are some of the dominant strategies that you use?
You make paying them a quick visit, just introducing yourself. I mean, big believer in the human touch, and you know, shaking hands with somebody and showing them the app for yourself, rather than calling them and be like, hey, we're a new app in your area.
Person to person interaction.
Yeah, for sure.
Very scary.
They're just more comfortable with it. They, you know, hand them a business card and you, you know, let them know that you can call them, or they can call you anytime. You know, they're very comfortable with that.
Oh, okay.
So I have a quick question. So as far as the physical discount cards go, those usually have an expiration date, I believe. How does the app work? Is there a certain date where the discount is no longer valid, or?
No, great question. I'm glad you asked. So, we can still, the way that, you know, we host it, you know, in the back end of our application, you can, you know, set, hey, this campaign, we call it like a fundraising campaign. This fundraising campaign is set to expire. You know, some of them want to do year long fundraisers, and we've actually worked with organizations that want to do like a flash sale, like sort of being a 2-week thing, so we can host that as well. We're really flexible on that.
And have you had any repeat clients through this? Have you had restaurants that come back and want to do more promotions with you? Or
I mean, we'll have you know, we have a whole system for communicating with our merchants. So you know, they'll come back and say, hey, you know, we want to get involved with this. Can you add you know, this offering to it? And you know, because, like, especially sort of the again, the mom and pop restaurants, you know, once they get a little traction and see some return from offering, you know, a basic discount, they want to get more involved and get more people in their doors. So that's another cool thing to see, is when somebody sees it for themselves, then they come back and call you. That's a fun thing.
Yeah, and that's great when you're helping the little guy out, like the mom and pop shops.
Oh, for
restaurants.
Sure.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, where were you 8 years ago when I was hustling around my neighborhood with these little, we had Hoya cards on Harrison graduate.
Yep.
And man, trudging through there, and then you get to a house and one of your friends has already gone there, and then you end up racing them for that, man. Yeah, the digital age is, it's
something.
The
else.
Lazy age, the,
Yeah, the lazy age, right? You know, the beauty of it is you can still go sell in person, but then you know, also supplement that with your social media networks. That's the beautiful thing about the app, when, you know, when used properly, it can be, you know, somebody can easily sell, you know, $400 worth of, call them like reward packs within, you know, within a couple of weeks, as opposed to hustling around neighborhoods and maybe cracking 100. So I used to do the same thing myself, which is why, I really love the idea when I initially got introduced to the organization, because, you know, you played football or high school in rugby or something, or played rugby in high school?
I played football and rugby in high school. But
gotcha. Yeah. So I was playing football growing up, and over in Gwinnett for Mill Creek. So doing the whole hawk card every year. It's like, oh, here we go again. It's like, so, you know, helping out with that is a lot of fun.
And obviously you're taking it over to the digital side. Mm-hmm. How has working with mobile payment platforms such as Apple Pay or Android Pay affected digital fundraising?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, the organizations with a lot of extra development resources can really utilize, you know, integrating with Apple Pay. That's actually one of our most common feature, you know, requests is, you know, being able to just, you know, flip over to the Apple Pay and be able to pay that way. I mean, we use Stripe, which I think is, you know, that's a very commonly accepted, you know, mobile gateway for payments and stuff. So we actually don't touch any kind of the you know, handling of the money initially. So,
and is Stripe just an application that you can download on?
Yeah, you can basically, so it's actually phone. It's actually built into our application.
Oh, nice.
So they're that's the way they make their money, is like, you know, a very small portion of the money that they move, but in return they offer a very secure way of, you know, handling money. So, you know, really leaving that to a third party is best for everybody. But yeah, they're a huge impact on the mobile app industry as well.
And how did you get connected with them?
They're just a pretty common, I wouldn't say common, I guess, but you know, they're pretty commonly accepted, you know, form of you know, mobile payments. So, you know, again, you're able to, as a developer, you know, build Stripe into your application. So, you know, if you're ever needing to accept money, you know, if you're to go through our app and like donate to a specific fundraising campaign, you would hit the donate button, it'll actually pop out with like the Stripe window and you'll pay through that. So it's like a separate, you know, separate part of the, you know, whole experience of buying it.
Oh, so just sense. Like essentially Apple Pay or Android Pay from business to business.
More or less. And it's okay. Just built in. Yeah.
So Stripe's exclusively a mobile app?
Stripe, so they're pretty, I guess they're one of those classic, like, biggest tech companies you never heard of, right, unless you're just in a position where you need to get familiar with them. But you know, I don't know other examples off the top of my head, but I'm sure they're built into thousands of applications out there that you've probably used that you didn't even notice. And the next time you're using an app to pay for something, check and see if it's Stripe, because I'd be, you know, it's a good shot that it is.
Awesome.
Awesome. So I was doing a little research beforehand on LinkedIn, and some of your top skills that came up was customer service and social media, teamwork, and leadership. Is there any like words of advice or?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, as far as customer service goes, that's something that, you know, as early we really you know, pride on is being very responsive. And you know, we are a small team at the moment, but you know, with a lot of users, where, you know, we use a tool called Zendesk to keep track of, you know, pretty common like support ticketing system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after implementing that and being able to handle you know, things with the users, and we were able to get turnarounds on, you know, an inquiry within an hour. This is like the same industry standard as organizations, you know, hundreds of times our size. So that's something that we're really happy with in that department. You know, from a leadership perspective, you know, that's a never, you know, skill to always be working on. But you know, whether it's, you know, helping lead a team at work, or, you know, lead the crew at Zerly, or, you know, whatever that is, you know, that's always helpful.
And what would you say your best method of leading would be?
Really understanding how people learn, what they respond to, and, you know, being able to adapt to everybody, because, you know, one style of leadership isn't going to fit everybody. Mm-hmm. And really taking that time to get that one-on-one relationship with somebody, and, you know, understanding how to move forward, as opposed to, you know, hey, this is how I lead. Like, either you're on the train or not. You know, that's not the kind of way, not my style for sure.
That makes sense. Yeah, interesting enough. I mean, one of the ways I learned one of the best strategies for leadership was actually through rugby. Mm-hmm. Just one phenomenal teammate, Daniel Medina. He was one of the toughest people I've ever seen, and he just got in there, worked, hit the gym every day, and he wasn't an active leader on the team. He didn't have any like big roles or titles or anything like that. But when it came to game time, he just put in the work, no matter how tough the game was, and he just went in there full blast every time, and it inspired me to go. And I realized there that it's leading comes through example.
For sure. And completely agree.
Just inspiring people through your own example is one of the most powerful ways to lead.
No, I'm completely on board with that. And I think one thing that our generation might lose sight of is that you don't need a, you know, a title to lead. You don't need to be called the captain or be called a manager or director to be able to lead. I mean, anybody can do that by example. So and just by, you know, helping serve others. And, you know, it's like, hey, if you have a teammate that's, you know, lacking somewhere or has issues somewhere, like, you know, offer a helping hand. Like, that's a, you know, great way to lead for sure.
And you've been an entrepreneur for a while now. How do you define entrepreneurship?
Really just, I mean, my way of thinking about it is identifying a gap in the market, something that's, you know, some segment of either you know, consumers or businesses that are underserved, and you know, developing something that you know, will fill that void, and then, you know, from there, just, you know, gathering the resources you need and executing your strategies. I mean, that's, you know, when you boil it all down, that's really what the I mean, in my opinion, that's what it comes down to.
All right. And if there was one thing when you started out that you wish you knew now, that you wish you knew then, what would that be?
That is a great question. Is in terms of like getting started, was early initially, like, yeah. What do I wish? Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of just little nuances that we built out to, you know, make the user experience better, or just like make this. I'm very operationally minded. There's a lot of things operationally that we were doing things the hard way at first, and you know, we probably could have you know, taken the sting off our learning curve if we had just you know, known a few of those tricks in the beginning. But you know, it worked out.
Yeah, that's one thing about having the entrepreneurial mindset, is that you view failure and risk in different ways. And failure is just a learning opportunity, and risk is just something that should drive you. It's something that's not avoidable. You just have to take it head on and just learn from your experiences.
Absolutely.
So thank you for your time, Zach. Thank you so much for coming on.
No, again, I appreciate you guys having me on board, and be happy to come back anytime.
Awesome. And what would be the best way for our listeners to get in contact with you? LinkedIn or Twitter?
Yeah, LinkedIn. I could definitely, the LinkedIn URL, there's not a whole lot of Zach Sergios out there. So yeah, I pop up pretty high in search results there. Or for anything, you know, Zerli related, just zach@zerli.com can be, you know, pretty easily reached there. So I'm always living by the email, so I can definitely get in contact with people there.
All right. And once again, I am Darren Parkinson, and my esteemed co-host is Alex Stoker. We are Business Radio U, unifying business and university by showcasing the best in business.